Good morning, and welcome to Simply Science. It's Monday, April 15th. On today's show, Easy Life Science issues new shares and the Barron Speaker Series fact-checks the science in popular sci-fi. Plus, a genetic engineer receives the Oscars of Science Prize for cancer treatment. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Science. We start off with some financial news from the biotech sector. Australian genomic life science company EZ Life Science Holdings has announced the issuance of over 1.7 million new shares to a sophisticated investor. The shares were priced at 50 cents each. For more on this development, we're joined now by our correspondent. So what can you tell us about this share issuance and why EZ chose to go this route?
Well, David, EZ issued these new shares under a specific provision of Australia's Corporations Act. Section 708AE allows companies to issue shares to certain investors without having to provide a full disclosure document. The idea is that these sophisticated investors are considered to have sufficient investment experience and knowledge to evaluate offers without a prospectus. For a smaller company like EZZ, it provides a more streamlined way to raise capital.
And what do we know about EZ Life Science Holdings and its focus as a company?
EZZ is involved in genomic life science research with the goal of tackling major health challenges. The company also has a significant e-commerce presence to market its products. Genomics is a cutting-edge field that involves studying the complete set of DNA within organisms. By analyzing genomic data, researchers hope to better understand diseases and develop targeted treatments. Companies in this space aim to commercialize genomic insights into products that can improve human health.
Do we have any details on how EZZ plans to use the proceeds from this capital raise?
The company hasn't provided specifics yet on the allocation of these new funds. But for an early-stage life sciences company, typical uses of capital would include funding further research and development, expanding lab capabilities, hiring scientific talent, and investing in sales and marketing initiatives. The $854,000 raised is a relatively modest amount, but could help accelerate key projects. Investors will likely be watching for updates on the company's progress in upcoming reports and presentations.
Finally, what should investors keep in mind when evaluating a company like EZ Life Science?
Well, the genomics field is still nascent and rapidly evolving. While it holds immense promise, investors should be prepared for a higher degree of risk and uncertainty compared to more established industries. Key factors to watch include the strength of a company's scientific team, its intellectual property portfolio, partnerships with leading research institutions, and any early signs of commercial traction. As always, investors should carefully review a company's financial filings and seek professional advice before making investment decisions.
Thanks for that update on EZ Life Science Holdings and the genomics space. Shifting gears to another fascinating area of scientific research, a botanist at the University of Chicago is using advanced microscopy to study cells in a live state while also exploring the science behind popular science fiction. Jotham Austin II, a 1996 graduate of Penn State Barron, will discuss his work in a talk titled Seeing Small, Thinking Big, using electrons and words to understand life at his alma mater today. For more on this, we're joined by our science correspondent. Tell us about the electron microscopy work Austin is doing at his University of Chicago lab.
Austin uses electron microscopes to study cells that are frozen with their structural and biochemical activity intact. He works as the facility director of advanced electron microscopy at the Gordon Center for Integrative Sciences, which is part of a $25 million National Science Foundation initiative focused on quantum science. The goal is to be able to take any biological problem and image it at every resolution scale, from the protein level at the angstrom scale, up to cell tomography at the nanometer scale, and even larger volumes. It's a comprehensive approach to visualizing and understanding biological systems.
Fascinating. Now, in addition to his microscopy research, Austin also explores the real science or lack thereof in science fiction through his writing and on his podcast, Rabbit Hole of Research. What does he examine there?
On the podcast and his Substack newsletter, Austin puts popular sci-fi concepts from movies, TV shows, and books under a scientific microscope, so to speak. He looks at things like zombies, mutants, and rogue AI to see how the science stacks up. One concept he discusses is hand-wavium, a term for how sci-fi writers often gloss over or abandon scientific accuracy for the sake of plot and storytelling. Basically, he's fact-checking the science of franchises like Star Trek and seeing how it holds up to real scientific scrutiny.
Can you give an example of one of these sci-fi concepts he's analyzed?
In a recent podcast episode, Austin and his co-host examined the fictional chemical 2,4,5-trioxin from the 1985 film Return of the Living Dead. In the movie, this chemical turns people into zombies when released. Austin explained that trioxin seems to be loosely based on Agent Orange, the defoliant infamously used by the U.S. military in the Vietnam War. However, he points out it's quite different from trioxane, which is a real chemical used by morticians for preserving the appearance of corpses. So the movie took some inspiration from real substances, but created a fictional chemical with very different effects for the sake of the zombie story.
It's always interesting when pop culture and real science intersect like that. Beyond the podcast, Austin has also written some science fiction of his own, hasn't he?
Yes, he has written a few works of fiction that presumably pay a bit more attention to scientific accuracy than the movies he reviews. Austin has penned a sci-fi novel titled Will You Still Love Me If I Become Someone Else?, as well as a novella called Eve, which portrays a romance between a werewolf and a human. So he's exploring classic sci-fi and fantasy concepts, but likely with a more scientifically grounded approach, given his background.
A truly multifaceted approach to science, studying the very small through electron microscopy, while also thinking big about science in fiction and culture. The intersection of real science and imaginative worlds. Austin's talk at Penn State Barron tonight is sure to be thought-provoking on many levels. Thank you for this fascinating preview. Speaking of groundbreaking science, a French-Canadian scientist has been awarded a prestigious Oscars of Science prize for his research into using genetically modified immune cells to fight cancer. Michel Sadelain received the breakthrough prize at a star-studded ceremony in Los Angeles on Saturday. For more on this story, we're joined now by our science correspondent. So tell us, what exactly did Sadelain's research entail?
Sadelain developed an innovative technique to genetically reprogram human T cells, a key component of the immune system, using a disabled virus. By modifying these T cells to grow claw-like structures called antigen receptors, he enabled them to precisely target and attack specific cancer cells. This groundbreaking approach laid the foundation for a new form of therapy known as CAR-T, which has demonstrated remarkable effectiveness in treating certain types of blood cancers that were previously difficult to treat.
It sounds like this research has the potential to be a real game changer in the fight against cancer. But Sadelain mentioned that many of his colleagues were initially skeptical that his approach would work. Why was that?
Sadelain's idea to genetically engineer immune cells was quite unconventional and faced skepticism from the scientific community for a long time. Manipulating the complex immune system and reprogramming T cells to fight cancer was seen as a daunting challenge. Many doubted whether it would be feasible to create these modified cells and if they would actually be effective in targeting and eliminating cancer cells in patients. However, Sadelain's perseverance and the promising results from early studies gradually won over the skeptics and paved the way for further development of CAR-T therapy.
And Sadelain is sharing this prestigious breakthrough prize with another scientist, American immunologist Carl June. What was June's role in advancing this field of research?
Carl June conducted independent research that also significantly contributed to the development of CAR-T therapy. June's work focused on refining the techniques for genetically engineering T cells and optimizing their cancer-fighting abilities. He led clinical trials that demonstrated the remarkable efficacy of CAR-T therapy in treating certain types of leukemia and lymphoma. June's research helped to validate the potential of this approach and accelerate its translation from the lab to the clinic. Together, the pioneering work of Sadelain and June has opened up exciting new possibilities for harnessing the power of the immune system to combat cancer.
It's truly inspiring to see the impact that dedicated scientists like Sada Lane and June can have in advancing medical treatments and improving patient outcomes. Thank you for that insightful report on this well-deserved recognition for their groundbreaking research in the fight against cancer. Now, shifting gears to a different aspect of human connection, the concept of love languages has captured the public's imagination for decades. With Gary Chapman's book, The Five Love Languages, selling over 20 million copies worldwide. But a recent study from the University of Toronto is casting doubt on the effectiveness of this popular approach to relationships. Here to discuss the findings is our Simply Science correspondent. So what exactly did this study uncover about love languages?
The study took a critical look at the assumptions behind Chapman's love languages framework. Despite the widespread popularity of the concept, the researchers found little empirical evidence to support it. For example, Chapman asserts that each person has a primary love language, and that couples are more satisfied when they express love in their partner's preferred language. However, the study found that people actually value multiple expressions of love, not just one. It also questioned whether the five love languages are truly distinct, as there seems to be a lot of overlap and inconsistency in how people perceive and prioritize them.
That's interesting, because the idea that you need to speak your partner's love language to have a happy relationship has become almost conventional wisdom. Did the study offer any alternative frameworks for thinking about love and relationships?
Yes. The researchers proposed that instead of categorizing expressions of love into specific languages, we should think of love in a relationship as more of a balanced diet. Just like our bodies need a variety of nutrients to be healthy, a successful relationship requires a diverse range of emotional nutrients, things like affection, support, quality time together, and open communication. Rather than getting hung up on rigid categories, partners should focus on engaging in behaviors and gestures that resonate with their unique dynamic and attend to each other's specific needs in a more holistic way.
So it's not about finding that one magic formula, but taking a more comprehensive and personalized approach. Given how entrenched the love languages concept has become, what do you think are the implications of this study? How might it impact the way people approach their relationships going forward?
I think one key takeaway is the importance of grounding our understanding of relationships in empirical research rather than just popular theories, no matter how appealing they might be. The researchers emphasize the need for more public education around the complexities of human connection and evidence-based approaches to cultivating intimacy. They also call for accessible resources and interventions based on scientific findings rather than romanticized notions. Ultimately, while frameworks like love languages can provide helpful starting points, lasting relationship satisfaction requires ongoing effort to deeply understand and attend to your partner's unique needs.
While the secret to love might be more complex than any one best-selling book can capture, that wraps up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Science. We'll see you back here tomorrow.